Welcome to Showing Up Solo, your go-to source for solopreneur success in the digital world. You're not just running a business, you're wearing all the hats, from CEO to content creator. What if I told you there's a way to master online marketing without sacrificing all your time? Hello, everyone, and welcome back for another episode of Showing Up Solo. I am absolutely thrilled to be joined by the Chantel Davison, copywriting coach extraordinaire. Many of you know, if you've been listening for a while, that Chantel has been a big influence in my journey and for many other solopreneurs. Chantel, would you like to just say a quick hello and reintroduce yourself to my audience for those who haven't met you yet?
Of course. Yeah. Hi, I'm Chantel Davison. And I am a copywriter and a copy coach based over in England, for those of you listening in America and Canada, down in Hastings by the seaside, where I live with my boyfriend and my cat. And I help businesses write better copy and copywriters do better business. So my goal is to help people understand that writing is a skill and not a God-given talent that some people have and some people don't. I think people get really caught up in that conception that it's just a talent and you either have it or you don't. So my goal is to show people that writing shitty first drafts is absolutely acceptable. And it's never too late to do something you really want to do with your life. I think, you know, I certainly got stuck in a corporate career for a lot longer than I would have liked. I know you did too. And I think a lot of people get funneled into that path. So I'm really keen to open up some possibility portals into something a little bit different and a lot more fun.
Yeah. I love what you do. You're one of the reasons I'm even here today, because I started off as a virtual assistant and then I stumbled upon you through masterclasses and social media. And it wasn't until I took your VA, back then VA Copy College, but now I believe it's called Paid to Write. Is that the
program? It is, indeed. Well, there is still VA Copy College. So VA Copy College is a self-paced course now, specifically for VAs. But yeah, I have a six-month mastermind course program for anyone who wants to get paid to write but has no idea where to start. Like, they don't have their own business yet, they haven't run a business, or maybe they've been doing freelancing a bit, but just haven't got the foggiest how to get to that next step. Because I think getting started is one thing, but getting off the starting line can feel really, really hard by yourself. So,
oh, you're telling me. That's a lot of what I focus on now too with my clients. Mm-hmm. Is I've seen a lot of people kind of on the fence or just getting started, and they just don't seem to get past those first few clients. And a lot of it that stumps them is marketing and how to like figure those things out.
Yeah.
So, I have to say, like, your course changed things so much for me. It was so useful in terms of the information, but also it helped me realize that I actually a pretty kick-ass copywriter.
Yes, you are.
but it's true about it being a skill. Definitely. Yeah. I was trained to be a design technology teacher. And so drawings heavily used in that. And we were always told, like, you can teach anyone to draw. I mean, I literally had to learn how to teach people how to draw. So I know it's one of those skills that people often think you're just born with, but it's just learning how to, it's something you can pick up, you know, it's something you can learn to do and then get better and better the more you do it. So.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the time people think with skills as well, you forget how much of what we take for granted is a skill. Like learning to walk, walking is a skill. You know, anything that we do in our life, we started off terrible at. So, but a lot of that was when we were children. So we've forgotten it. Whereas, you know, learning a new skill as an adult feels so scary because you have to make yourself vulnerable. You have to make it okay to be terrible at something in order to start. And I think for a lot of people, especially if they're used to, you know, getting funneled towards things they're good at in their adult life, to decide to pick up something that actually you're kind of shit at is really scary.
You know, that reminds me of a conversation I was having about gender pronouns, actually, and trying to like remove it from our language. Yeah. And I was saying with my friends that I think one of the reasons that younger people, like children, for example, have an easier time with that versus, our generation who are consciously trying to alter our language, but are struggling. It's because we're not used to being the person who doesn't know the right way to do it. Like, kids are used to getting things wrong all the freaking time because they don't know what the heck they're doing. They're learning. Whereas we've gotten so used to knowing what we're doing that anytime something new comes along that leaves us a little uncomfortable, a little off center, leaves the potential or the room to get something horribly wrong, we don't like, and we try to avoid it like the plague. I don't know. Do you think so too?
Yeah, I think so. And it's a neuroplasticity thing as well, isn't it? Like, when you're young, your brain is just is so susceptible to change. Like, you're so open to new ideas, and you kind of think you could be good at anything because that's what you get told when you're a kid. You know, you could be a fireman, you could be an astronaut, you could be whatever the hell you want. And so you believe that, and your brain believes that too. It's all stretchy and spongy, and it's soaking stuff up. And then we get older and our neural pathways get formed, and a lot of our beliefs are just habit. You know, a lot of our beliefs about ourselves, about other people, about gendered pronouns, whatever you want to mention, you know, these things become formed neural pathways. So we just get stuck in thinking about things the way we've always thought about them.
Yeah.
And so same with writing. You know, the more you practice, the more you get used to doing that thing, the more formed that pathway in your mind gets, and the more it becomes something that is normal to do.
Yes, exactly. And now, so this is like a little bit of a segue, but we're actually here today to talk about sales funnels. Uh-huh. But it's funny because I know so many people who just like, ugh, funnels. I don't know what that is. That sounds really complicated. It sounds really technical. I don't know what I'm doing. So I don't even want to, you know, la, 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 I don't want to know. And I think you'd agree with me. They're not actually as big, scary as people think they are they?
No, they certainly don't have to be. I think when people use technical language like funnels, you imagine it to be this very complex technical, I think because there's a lot of automation, there's a lot of tech and software and stuff available to do these things now, people assume they have to be experts in order to achieve a funnel. But essentially, a funnel is just taking someone from awareness to purchase. That's the simplest version of that journey. It's just, does someone know about you yet? Cool. Make sure they know about you. Then teach them a little bit about yourself so they understand what problem you can solve and what your solution is. And then hopefully invite them to make a purchase. So it literally is just that journey of selling someone something, but we've complicated it a lot in terms of how we talk about it because there's money in the industry, right? People, yeah. Any industry that can be complicated in order to position some people as experts and some people not will by dint of, you know, that expertise and that complication sound complicated.
Yeah,
that's what people want.
Absolutely. So let's talk about what is a sale. I mean, you've just basically given a simple definition, but when most people mm-hmm. are talking about a funnel for, let's say, online marketing, for our online service mm-hmm. providers who are listening, what does like a typical sales funnel look like for your average online service provider?
So the funnel I always start with, if I'm talking to a new client who's starting up a business from scratch, you want some kind of lead magnet funnel. Yeah. So that's the first one we always start with. And that is putting something out into the world that's going to attract people you want to work with. That's really important. So not just any old thing that's going to attract anyone. It's, you know, what resource can you give that's going to help people get from where they are right now to being ready to work with you, or that's going to help them overcome some objection or fear or challenge that they might have that might stand in the way of them working with you. So that might be a quiz that gives people information about what they should be doing next. It might be a PDF or a video. It could be, you know, a million different things that we can have as lead magnets. But the idea is to attract people into your audience who want that problem solved and to give them a quick fix. And once they've downloaded that, which is the first point of the funnel, they are into an email sequence where you get to know them a little bit more. So the idea is to, it's called a nurture sequence or a welcome sequence, depending what you want to call it. But it's just telling people a bit more about you, sharing who you are, what you do, how you can help them. And then you'll normally drop them into some kind of offer. So whether that's a sales page or a sales video, whatever that looks like, it'll be, now that you know who I am, how I can help you and what my solution is, I would love you to buy it. And I think a lot of people overcomplicate it by putting too many steps between that initial lead magnet and the sale. People feel like they have to pay a lot of dues before they invite people to make a purchase. but the best analogy I ever heard for, you know, having a fairly quick checkout, my friend Katie Prince used to talk about going into a shop and you pick up a jumper you really want and you look around and you want to buy it, but there's no checkout anywhere. And I think that's what a lot of people do with their online businesses, is they set up their lead magnet, they set up their store, but they're so afraid to ask people for money that they actually make it almost impossible to purchase something from them.
Hey there, fellow dreamers and future solopreneurs. Are you at the very beginning of your journey, eager to kickstart your business and find those first clients? I've got something special just for you. My free guide, Find Your First Clients: 3 Actionable Steps to Jumpstart Your Business. Inside, I've distilled the wisdom of successful solopreneurs into 3 actionable steps tailored for newcomers like you. Expect straightforward, no-nonsense advice that you can put into action today. Ready to turn your business dreams into reality? Grab your free copy now at showingupsolo.com/free. Unlock the secrets to landing your very first clients and start your entrepreneurial journey on the right foot. I'm here to guide you every step of the way.
That's so funny. That sounds so much like my shoe store analogy. I do that analogy all the time too, where like when someone walks into the store and they're looking at the shoes, mm-hmm. And then they pick up a shoe, that's like them saying, okay, this is like, I'm interested in this. And your sales associate is supposed to come up and say, hi, can I bring you your size? And like, mm-hmm. back when I used to work in a shoe store, we had a rule that you had to bring like 3 pairs of shoes, one like they asked for, one similar, and then one completely different. Which was a very good tactic. And then you get them tried on, and while you're trying it on, you're telling them about the shoes and the quality and everything. And so like the lead magnet is that shoe that they're trying on. And then the mm-hmm. extra shoes that you bring, and the conversation you're having is that email sequence, warming them up, giving them the information they need to feel like they're ready to make a purchase. And then mm-hmm. you have to close the sale. You have to say, okay. So, and these are one of my favorite ones. We're like, which pair are we taking today? Just assuming it. Or are we taking both today? Or would you like the matching hammock? But whatever you do, you ask them if they're going to buy it, and yeah. and they want to buy it. And you're just, you know,
it'll be bizarre to just walk away with all the shoes and be like, okay, well, it was really fun trying on shoes with you today. Bye.
I'll leave you here with these shoes for about 30 minutes to an hour. And you know, you come and get me when you're ready. No one does mm-hmm. that. Then they sort of and they have like, they go away, but you ask them if they want the shoe. If they don't want the shoe, they'll say, no, thank you. Can't afford mm-hmm. it today. Or was just browsing today, but they won't buy the shoe if they don't want to, but they will appreciate you asking them.
Yeah. So. And I guess the part of the funnel that is important to talk about for newer business owners, because you just touched on the no there. And I think a lot of people are afraid of no's, but if you're never getting no's, you're never getting yeses. And I think that's where the funnel shape comes into it. That's why it's so important. You know, if you want one yes, you're going to have at least 10 people come into the store, you know, and if you want one yes, you're going to have 5 people trying on some shoes and 10 people come into the store. And that's how a funnel works. You have 10 people download your lead magnet, only 5 will read your emails, probably only one will purchase. That's why you've got to do all the work up the top with the lead magnet to make sure you're attracting enough people in. But I think people get so disappointed as soon as they get the first no that they don't trust the process often. Yeah. You know, people get 1 person, 2 people, maybe even more, download their lead magnet, go to their emails, and then not make a purchase. And they decide it's not working and they build a whole new funnel.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, it takes some time. It takes some optimization.
I have had this conversation a couple times with a couple different clients and prospective clients who were getting ready to build their funnel. And their ask is, okay, should I try 2? Or, you know, I mean, are we right to focus on just 1 lead magnet? I can think of about 10 different ones to do. Like, should we be doing advertising and everything? Now, the piece of advice I always give is wait. Test this funnel first. Let's test this one. We can like get some people in there, see how it's working. Once we know that the funnel is tight and that we're getting the conversion rate from the funnel that we want, once we're getting enough yeses out of the people going in, then we can start worrying about how we're getting them in there. But I'd love to know what your advice is on that topic.
Yeah, I think I would have always said the same thing until recently because of AI.
Ah.
So I think now it is so easy to get something on its feet, even if it's a, like I say, a rubbish version of it. You can get something on its feet fast enough that it's probably worth trying a different concept or two and A/B testing to see what works with the audience. And it didn't used to be the case. You know, you couldn't whack together a PDF in 2 minutes or in 10 minutes in the same way that you could now. You couldn't set up quizzes in 10 minutes, which you can now. So if you've got a little time and you genuinely don't know what works with your audience, I would say it's worth testing out a few options, but certainly not worth spending money. You know, let's say we're doing a new Facebook ads, for example. You, like you've said quite rightly, you want to make sure you know your funnel's working before you're chucking tons of ad spend in the top.
Yeah,
you want it to be a funnel, not a sieve, right? You want to make sure that if you put things in the top, something's coming out the bottom, not that everything is falling out the sides. So yeah, optimize each layer as you go, I would say. So if you have, you've got two lead magnets and you don't know which one's going to be best, trial both of those, but keep everything else the same. What people often do in marketing is change everything.
Yes.
All at once. And then they have no idea what was working, what wasn't, what has been responsible for the change, what wasn't. So yeah, try a couple of lead magnets, then whichever one people are loving, go with that one and then refine down.
Because there's other things to factor in too. For example, maybe you have a really appealing lead magnet and you're getting lots of clicks and downloads, but then those people aren't purchasing. Mm-hmm. So is that then like the sales funnel, or is that you're getting the wrong type of person coming through? You know, you need to, like, there's all sorts of places, you know, or maybe you get lots of clicks on your ad, but then they get to the landing page and they don't download. What's going on there? You're losing them at some point. So is it the wording of the ad that's not promising what the landing page appears to promise? You know, is it the copy on the landing page? But you're right. Yeah. Focus on one element and tweak that, refine that before you start changing all the other elements, whatever that element is.
And I think to your point, you know, the most important thing is understanding who you're talking to and who you want to sell to. There is absolutely no use putting out a lead magnet in the world that everyone's going to want to download, because you don't want everyone in your funnel. You don't want every single person, because not every person is a potential client for you, or at least not a good one. So the best advice I can give with lead magnets is to be as specific as possible. Like, you know your ideal client inside out, or at least you should. If you don't, take a step back, go listen to one of Hannah's other episodes of this podcast that no doubt tells you how to do that. But insert number here. But, you know, but if you don't know who your ideal client is, there's work to be done. You shouldn't necessarily be creating lead magnets if you don't know who you're talking to. But once you do know who you're talking to, make that lead magnet as specific to that person as you possibly can. I think a lot of people are afraid of alienating people if they use really specific language.
They want to try to be nice and allow everyone. But the truth is, like I always say, you don't want to work with everybody. You know, it's like dating. You don't want to date everybody you meet.
Hardly anyone.
we all have our preferences. And you're not going to want to go out with everybody who comes across you on the street. So it's the same thing with business. You don't want everybody to be your client. And whether we like to admit it or not, there are some clients that we prefer working with, and there are some clients that have deal breaker elements.
Massive pain in the asses.
Yes. Yeah. And you need to just kind of trust that, like we know as well, like, you know, when you're getting on a call with them, sometimes I could just tell just from their answers in the call booking form. I'm like, it's not going to happen, but, you know,
yeah,
go with your gut, because honestly, it's you who has to work with them in the end. So
yeah, that's right. And the more specific your lead magnet can be, the more likely you are to attract the right people too. Because if you can really nail down who you want in there, A, your conversion rates will be better. Because if you're attracting, let's say, you know, my old course VA Copy College that I do, if I had made a lead magnet that appeals to everyone who likes writing, I'm going to have such a low conversion rate, because they're going to get to the sales page, realize it's a VA's, and not buy it. Whereas if I make a lead magnet that's just for VAs, already I'm going to increase my conversion rate every stage of that funnel, because it's specific to them. It's the the analogy, I think it's Donald Miller who uses this, but he I was listening to podcasts or something, but there's an analogy about Nurofen, which I really enjoy. So Nurofen, do you have this in Canada?
I don't think so.
It's a pain medication. So in the UK, we have something called Nurofen. It's probably called something else there, some brand. But it's essentially ibuprofen.
Oh, okay.
It's a painkiller, right? Advil, so you have your own brand. Right, exactly. So you have your own brand, ibuprofen, it's a painkiller, works fine. Then you have your Nurofen. The cheap one's like 40p. Then you have your Nurofen, which is like £4. And people pay more because it's a brand. But then they also have Nurofen migraine, Nurofen period pain, Nurofen whatever the specific symptoms are. Those cost at least £2 more. And what's amazing about that is the efficacy in blind trials is also so much more. Like, they work better because people think it's solving their specific problem. The active ingredients are no different.
Yeah.
Absolutely no different. And I think when it comes to funnels and lead magnets and selling, it's kind of the same thing. Like, if you call yourself a copywriter for coaches, coaches are going to think you'll be better at writing for them than someone who's just a copywriter, because you've told them that you solve their specific problem. So it's the same thing.
Yeah. And that's a really great way to look at it too. So, okay. I know we could talk about this for hours and hours and hours, but in the interest of keeping, you know, respecting the time of our audience, mm-hmm. what would be your kind of last golden nuggets of wisdom or key takeaways that you want people to come away from this episode knowing about sales funnels?
Don't overcomplicate it. That's the most important bit. Don't overcomplicate it. Keep it simple. Make sure that you test it and optimize it before throwing loads of ad spend behind it, and ask for the sale. Make sure you don't bury the lead, and make sure you ask for the sale as directly as you can. You should be asking someone to make a purchase at the end of a funnel. And if you're not, it is not a funnel. It is just a really weird date someone went on. Sorry, the dating.
It's an awkward conversation
Exactly. People don't walk towards confusion. So make it really, really clear what they're getting from you if they decide to jump in. And like you said, you kind of nailed it. Give someone all the information they need to make a decision about whether or not it's right for them. Don't push people into buying if it's not, but also don't let people walk away without buying if it is.
Yeah. Especially if, you know, you found, like, I'm going to go back to shoes. I know shoes, but let's say like you've got someone just come in and says, like, I need something super comfortable with great art. And you're like, okay, well, this is the shoe. Like, this is the right shoe for you. And I'm confident because I sold this to other people. I own it myself. Like, I know that this is the right shoe. It's rude to be like, I'm not going to show her that though, because she didn't look in that direction. You're going to say, hey, you've told me what's up. This is the shoe that's going to solve your problem. Like it or not, like, it's up to you, take it or leave it. But this is what's right for your problem. You know,
that's right. And it's the take it or leave it bit. Yeah. That's it. All we want is to be given a yes or no decision when we're buying. Like, do you want this? Yes or no? That simplifies things for us. And yeah, if it's the right shoe, most times people will say yes.
Yeah.
We're all Cinderella.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me again, Chantel. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Before we just say goodbye, would you like to let the audience know where they can find you, how they can tap into your marvelous brain?
Yeah, sure. So I'm on Facebook as Chantel Davison and on Instagram as Copywriting Business Coach. So come find me, sharing tips, silly reels, lots of fun.
Wonderful. And thank you everyone for tuning in for another episode of Showing Up Solo. I can't wait to see you in the next episode.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Showing Up Solo. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us a review or sharing your thoughts in the comments. These simple gestures help us appease the algorithm gods and continue to bring you great, free education. Ready to navigate the world of marketing with confidence? Take the Marketing Compass Quiz, available at showingupsolo.com, to discover the next phase of your journey. And don't forget to explore our range of courses and coaching programs while you're there. Let's transform your solo venture into a thriving success story together. Until the next episode, keep showing up and making your mark in the world of solopreneurship. See you soon.